And this old fiddler, Anthony Hilberty. So it was he that composed this tune after having a long sleep at the seashore, sitting on a wee rock beside the sea. And you see, the sea rolling out and in, you see, the waves rolling out and in, had given the impression. He was listening to the whole thing in his sleep, you see, and had given the impression of this tune. And here it goes now.
Driving into Glencolum Cap, and you come through that gap in the road where the first time you see is the tower up on the top of the hill, and I've always likened it to getting a slap of a wave across the chest when you go into the sea. It's almost like a shock, and it happens every time I come into Glencolum Cap. I just find it so beautiful. It's a gorgeous place. Where we are here at the moment, overlooking the glen, it's kind of like, it would be the start, I suppose, of the Glen Road to Carrick. The geographical Glen Road to Carrick, and it's the start of where my start in terms of my coming to Glencolum Kill, because I can see down below here, I can see Mrs. Byrne's guest house where my family stayed in 1973, I think it was, and I think that was the first time we had been to Glen and stayed in Glencolum Kill, and that was the start of it, the love affair, if you want to call it, with the Glen and with this area of County Donegal. It was a great holiday. We toured around the whole area, saw all the sights, all the really beautiful parts, and also then at night we went into Carrick over the Glen Road, and we heard John Doherty playing in the Cellar Bar in Carrick, and that was that. After that I was hooked. To the left, where we're standing, you can see then to the beach. Yesterday the rollers, the waves were coming in like something out of Hawaii 5-0. They were bashing against the rocks. It's a little bit more sedate today, but still fairly powerful. And then if you look over to the east or the northeast of where we are, you can see all the mountains stretching off up into County Donegal, and it's one of those places. I've been to Kerry, I've been to Cork, and you see all the beautiful places there, and they are spectacularly beautiful, but this is as good as anything you're going to see in any part of the country. I think it's as beautiful as any part, and it takes a hold on you. I remember the Friday night of the holiday we were up here, we went into what's down below us there, Hollowira. Father McDyer at the time had a Friday evening ceilidh, I think. The ceilidh band was, if I remember right, 9 or 11 fiddle players, and that was it. Just a row of fiddle players playing for the dances, and I'd never seen a ceilidh band of just 9 fiddlers and nothing else. I've got more used to that now in more recent times, where when we come up here or over to around here or over towards the Crows, over with the Campbells over there, where up on stage you'll have 9, 10, 11 fiddle players playing for the dances at night, and I think it's unique to this place where you just get fiddle players, and it's great fun.
Tell me about the Glen Road to Carrick.
Glen Road to Carrick, the tune or the road?
Both.
Well, the road is 6 miles, 10 kilometres long. It's over the mountains, and it links. There are no houses along it at all, apart from the remains of one house down off the road, which is belonged to a well-known fiddle player from the area, going back about 100 years, or maybe a little less than 100 years ago, John Mosey McGinley. And he's one of the people who's credited with writing the tune, the Glen Road to Carrick. He wrote a few other tunes as well, or he's reputed to have written a few other tunes as well. But then another fiddle player from over in Kilcar, which would be the far side of Carrick, by the name of Francis Jarrick O'Byrne, he is reputed to have put the last part onto the Glen Road to Carrick, or he called it On the Road. It's sometimes called On the Road from Carrick to Glen, or On the Road from Glen to Carrick. So there's many different stories about the tune, and there are different versions of it. The version that's played mostly now would be the one that's more associated with Francis Jarrick, whereas John Doherty, the great fiddle player, had another version of it again. I think they are all versions will eventually go back to a tune called the Chorus Reel, which is a Scottish reel, but it has been adapted and, as I would say, improved by its contact with fiddle players in this part of the country, especially. And it's a great tune. It's a kind of an iconic tune in a sense that an awful lot of people, when you play that tune, they say, ah, Donegal fiddle playing. It seems to be the one that most represents Donegal fiddle playing to a lot of people.
He was well sheltered down here, just the same, wasn't he? Well built in.
These are the ruins of John Mosey McGinley's house.
From what I gather, he was a trader, so he travelled a lot around the country, including he was known to have a white horse. And he did all his businesses from that, you know. So it would have been, he probably would have spent a lot of time away from here as well. But the tune, the Glen Road, I mean, we're just down from the Glen Road here. And he's one of the people that it's associated with. I've seen that he's credited some places as the composer of the tune, or the person who adapted it from the chorus reel. But I was talking to Mick Brown about this the other day, and we agreed that Francis Jarrick would probably have a very strong claim on it, because he is known to have composed some very, very good tunes. The Launching of the Boat being one of them that I particularly like as well. So, and it was in his version of it that the last part goes in. I think that's what marks out the tune as a special tune. To me, that's what marks it out as a special tune, is that the extra last part that's put onto it. So I'd give strong credence, if you like, to the Francis, or Francis. The story that Francie composed on it, or worked on it. So, we play the tune?
Yeah. Well,
if the rain holds up. Checking out the flats. The house martins are here as well.
Yeah. And a trailer and two tractor tyres.
This is the way I play it now, myself.
Salmon and teal and beer yet.
Is it not?
Didn't come in. Yeah.
It's quite late, is it?
Whatever the wind. Mm. Yeah, it is. Yeah, so there's no salmon at all.
Mm-hmm. It's down in Galway.
My son's only made 1 week last year.
Great.
I didn't get 3 salmon the 1 week.
That's bad, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, what? Teal and beer for salmon long ago was something else.
Yeah.
It was so nice. Yeah. They're nothing now going in Killybegs. There are no fish coming into Killybegs now at all. Mm. They're fishing in where is it? Denmark.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and they're sold over there too. Yeah. Everything has changed, Paul.
It's all changed around.
Yeah.
This is Kitty Shan. She's 87 years old and says that she's as old as the mist. Kitty's a singer, and though she never learned to play instrumental music, she remembered loads of tunes. And through her lilting of them, she has kept them alive, many tunes that would have passed away long ago.
I was telling you last night, I'm trying to figure out as much for myself as for anyone else, why I came up here, or what kept me coming back to this place, here and Glencolum Kill, and the music, the people we met.
Yeah.
I mean, there's scenery all over the place, but
there's
scenery in every part of the country. That's
not
the reason you go.
Some nice places in Ireland too, that I even wasn't in.
I know, but it wouldn't be enough to bring you back again and again. I think.
I don't know.
Not for me, anyway. Not for me.
But I don't know. We got to like you people when you were coming. When the first festival started.
From 1980 onwards.
Yeah.
That was
Tommy Hitt did 10 of them.
He did, yeah.
Yeah.
I was telling him that.
And he always got the good music.
The first time I heard about
that's him. That's not faulting the others, you know.
Of course, yeah.
Everybody had to learn. You're not going to be good. In the beginning, at anything, it doesn't matter what it is.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm sure those people that were sitting around before you and sat down at that table, somebody said they were Germans. I'm sure they thought we were crazy.
That's
me,
right.
Especially.
You can't be too
well,
sensible.
I don't mind. No, it's not that.
No.
But I enjoy the music so much that I think everybody else should feel the same about it.
I know, yeah.
But you see, we know it.
You understand it.
I understand it. But they liked it too.
I do.
Yeah.
It's different ways of liking things, I suppose. What was that saying again?
Ish moran gus canbaga. Ni hanan as is a hill of lat. That's a rod.
Okay.
Or a branch of a tree. Agus ni hanan nadur da hill of wak. Every two sons weren't of the same nature.
There you go. I was telling Peter about, we're down in the Sleeve League, and John Maloney's as it was.
Aye.
There, I was telling about Con catching me by the sleeve one day at 12 o'clock in the day and taking me into the back room, and there he said, "We're going to play a few tunes now."
Mm.
And he said he only had the 9 tunes. Do you remember he used to say that?
Con?
Yeah.
Do you ever hear Con tell the story about how he started first?
No.
Was it with the tongs? He said something.
That's right. He put one tongue up to his chin and the other.
Yeah.
Practicing with the tongs.
Yeah.
He said he had 9 tunes, and then he's played from 12 o'clock on the day till about 1:30 in the morning. And he didn't play the same tune twice.
No, indeed. He had played 2 tunes.
Loads of tunes.
Yeah.
I learned an awful lot of tunes from Con from coming up those weekends.
Con had the old tunes that was going in his time. Then you see you hadn't people coming from Clare and from Dublin and everywhere like they are now.
I know
They kind of stuck to the old tunes, unless the like of John Doherty would have maybe a few from Scotland or something.
Or from other parts of Dublin.
And the home place in Crokland, this is the first house in Crokland. Like, there are not many houses altogether now, but anyway, I hear it's for sale.
Is it?
sad to think it's going to be sold.
Yeah.
But that can happen. And there are three girls in the family.
Right.
Yeah, but Katie's in Crove and the other two, one is in Scotland, the other's in England.
I see.
Yeah, they'll hardly come to live in it.
No.
Yeah. Shinnadoy.
Shinnadoy. When I heard him playing, and a lot of the other people, the likes of Francie Jarrig again, was another man I heard playing, they played using the whole fiddle.
Aye.
And lots of bow, but it was an eye opener. It really attracted me to come back again and again to hear more and more and more.
Yeah, sure, yeah. And then the people.
Oh, the people.
The atmosphere was great.
It was great altogether.
Yeah, yeah. I could laugh even yet.
That's right.
Yeah. We had fun. Yeah.
Oh, there was great atmosphere in that house.
It was great.
Great joking.
Yeah,
and
everything has changed, Paul.
It's all changed around.
Yeah. Changed for the worse. Look at all the years John Simey was up on the Golden Gate.
Yeah.
4 years.
That's where I heard
him. Non-stop.
That's where I heard him. Yeah. In 1973.
Yeah.
I was only 12 or something at the time.
He and Frank Cassidy were booked to play at my sister's wedding, Nora. Yeah. It was nice.
That'd be something else.
Oh, what? So, Shinanisha.
Yeah.
Oh, Bobo. Shinanisha. Nish.
That's it.
Come here. The breeze cream. Cad is playing meadows in the mesa. Anxious for war, it's their foot not cheera. Old time edgy, when you spay your wheel. My grass, more, not been on taste. Nahar and plur bum na nyolka. Na quinye galler waram viller. Marbis magrasik chas gimma.
Okay, this is the cellar bar, or I think it was called the Golden Gate as well. And this is the place we came to from Glencolum Kill with my mother. Two nights during that week in 1973, because John Doherty was living here at the time and he was playing downstairs in the cellar bar. And great Donegal music. I remember one night during one of the Carricks, one of the Flas in the Carrick Fla, my brother Tom was on his honeymoon. And he's travelling around the country, and he arrived here during the FLA, and we played a session downstairs. Load of people there listening, the place was packed. And at the end of the night then, Columbo Ward, who was a lovely fiddle player from this area, borrowed my fiddle to play a tune. And Tom couldn't believe that there were so many people standing around that could have taken that fiddle and played a tune as well, and played it as well as anybody that was sitting down, but they were more interested in listening to the tunes being played at the time. Well, I looked around and I realised that there were about a half a dozen more, at least, who could have done the same, taken up a fiddle. If you played a tune, they'd ask you for a different version of it, or they'd check out if you knew a particular version of the tune and maybe take the fiddle off you and show you where you'd gone wrong, but where they had a different way of doing it. And it was great to play in a place where so many people understood and appreciated the music. And that was a great thing at the time to come up here and to realise that an awful lot of people that shared the same interest in the same type of music. The front bar, again John Maloney's in the Sleeve League, was a very, very tight little narrow place. It was comfortable if there was about five or six people having a drink, but I'd say there must have been about 30 people crammed into the front bar because the Campbells had arrived down from Glenties, a good big squad of Campbells and a few more people with them, and they're all big men as well, so they don't mind me saying that. But the place was packed, and I remember Dermot McLaughlin was there, and I forget, there were a load more other people. Rab Cherry from Belfast was there, and a few more. And one fiddle was taken out, and I think Vincent played a tune on it, and then he passed it on to Dermot McLaughlin. It was passing over heads because there wasn't room for it to be passed from hand to hand. And so Dermot would play a tune, and then he'd pass it on, and I'd play a tune. And we stood there for about 3 hours, passing fiddles overhead and playing tunes. And one fiddle, so you got to hear everybody and got to hear what they were doing. And maybe again somebody would ask you to play a tune, or they'd ask you for a tune they'd heard you playing before and they wanted to hear it again. And that was a new thing for me at the time, but actually over the last good many years from coming up here, it's not that uncommon for one fiddle to be taken out and handed around and everybody gets to play. And if you've only the one tune, you play the one tune, or it goes on from there. And it's, you didn't see much of the day after that. In the repertoire, again, one of the things my grandfather Jim McBride had always said, when you're playing the fiddle, there's four strings on it, so you use them all. You don't just use the D, A and E. When I heard players, this is only something that I saw, and you'd be trying to find little ways into the music that weren't obvious to you, but in phrases of tunes, where a common enough tune, where again Con Cassidy, his version of Drowsy Maggie, which had a great second part to it. Notes, where in other parts the version down the country would be.
Will you do that and then go straight to Con Cassidy?
Okay. Oh, the two Drowsy Maggies. So that would show two ways. The first version I had learned many, many years before I came up here, and then I heard Con playing, and I've always stuck with that. It's one of the tunes that whenever I'm teaching in a class, I always teach that tune and make sure that, because it's well worth learning on the fiddle.
It gets passed on as well.
Oh yeah, very much so.
And would you, when you were teaching, would you always say you got that version, it's Con Cassidy's version?
Oh yeah, if I can remember who I got a tune from at all. If you learn a tune in the middle of a session and it's just one that's been there all the time, you can't say that. But if you know that you got a tune from so-and-so, from a particular person, then definitely that's part of the passing on. You have to mention it, because they don't just fall out of the air. And I don't get many tunes, if any tunes, out of books. Not that I can't read. I can read music, but I've never set out to learn tunes out of books. And it's just, I think they stick into my head better if I hear them from a person, or if I learn them in person from somebody. It wasn't just lashing out a gang of notes, which he could do well, but it was also putting the tune into context, where it had come from, where he'd learned it. And you see that in some players today that are very, very good at telling the story of a tune. I'm not terribly good at it myself. I tend to let my fingers do all the talking, but playing the tunes out. But there are some people who are very, very good with continuing the story of the tune. That the tune didn't just fall out of the sky, that it was handed on from somebody to somebody else, and that there was a story behind it.
Because it was mentioned today as well about how the names of tunes are being lost.
And I'm as guilty as anybody of that, because I learned an awful lot of tunes in sessions. If I remember to ask for the name of the tune, which is not all that often, within 2 minutes it's gone again. Now, I've been trying lately to raise the number of names I have, but I think actually part of remembering the names would be to remember who you learned it from, and that will put context onto it, and you can think about where it came from and how you got it.
That's also how they get called after people.
You get a lot of that. If the name isn't known, or if it's forgotten, then if it's associated with somebody, then, for instance, Con Cassidy's Jig. I don't think he composed that, but it just came to be known as Con Cassidy's Jig, the previous name. If it's remembered, it's not as important as the context from where it came. Or we were talking today to Kitty Shan, and there's a Kitty Shan's Barn Dance. which because she remembered it and it's associated with her, that's the name that has stuck with it. And it's a nice tune. We're in the house of Ronan Galvin in Bracha and are joined by Mick Brown, who's come in from Teelin. Both are from Dublin but have moved into the area, drawn initially by their love of the music of Carrick and of the areas around.
I started coming up here on family holidays and things like that from the mid-70s onwards up on through the 80s. And I think I was taken by the sense of space coming from suburbia in Dublin, and also the accent of the local people, the special accent that they had. And I think when I started playing the music, it just kind of cemented my relationship with the area, the locality. Yeah. But with the Irish language and the music, we're all kind of intermixed in my mind. As you were saying, like, it was very much alive at that time. If myself and Mick went into a pub and started to play into the early 90s, the early 1990s, very often there would be six or seven men at the bar, and they would turn around when you started, and they might give out about you, or they might ask you to play another tune or tell you you were playing out a tune, but they had opinions about it. And
some would have played as well at one stage.
They were just in touch with the music. And meeting Mick then in 1988, and the two of us meeting James Byrne at the same time.
Right. I think we were lucky that we came here at that time.
At the time.
Because if somebody was to come here now, I don't think they could possibly have the same experiences, you know?
No.
There were a lot of musicians around the place, really. There were a lot of, it has to be said, older.
Yeah.
Fiddle players and accordion players and people who could sing a song, local songs and so on. At that time, there were still people left. James Byrne would be an anomaly, really, in his generation. He's the only person of his generation, really, that plays to that extent. There would be one or two others, you know, Father Malloy, Minic Yowie, and then Micheál Carr, who's no longer with us, but only for James Byrne, I think we would never really have got onto it. Or I think the music here would be, I think James Byrne kept a lot of those older fellas going, because as their own community moved away from the music,
right,
and left it behind them. You know, it's no longer the music of the local people here, really, it has to be said. It's not the preferred music of the locality. I think it's a great pity, you know, it was generated in this area, all the stories and history that went with it, and really now it's been played in, I suppose it's true traditional music in general, but now it's more likely to be played in, the local tunes from here are more likely to be played in towns and cities somewhere else, or maybe even other countries, and that's a great thing, that's not a bad thing,
yeah.
But I think it's just sad that the connection between the local music here and the locality has been so weakened. And you know, I don't think anybody can do much about that. I don't think my presence here, for example, helps that at all.
So you've got the younger generation and the older generation. In between, locally, it's only really James Bourne, but at least there's a link being made there, which is important, you know, and there's a few other people like Aidan O'Donnell,
Gallagher's
Kilcarra, Stephen Gallagher, and Noreen Lyons, Irland Breffney, O'Donnell, people like that.
Francis John.
John Bourne.
The more I think of it, it's not that bad.
No, but they're all, I would, you know, they might disagree with me, but my view would be that they're to some degree isolated within their own generation. Their musical outlet is usually dependent on contact with us. Or I think myself, if it's going to survive, it probably has to go back to the houses. And maybe that's happening elsewhere in the country too. But the pub, from outside of the time when tourists come to this area, there's hardly a session between Donegal Town, Glencullen Kill, and Glenties. There's one or two nights there. But when the tourists come, then the bookings start coming in for us for pubs and so on. And, you know, like the other night in Biddy's, I was explaining to an English woman sitting beside me, she was very interested in the music and all that, but she was quite disappointed to, when I pointed out that of the all the people in the lounge listening to us, that there was only two or three locals, Kitty Shannon and a few more, and that everybody else was a visitor. She thought that, you know, there would have been a healthy mix of local and visitor. And the music was only very popular here when it served the dance, you know, so it had a social function. And the really it was popular, I suppose. And then you had other kinds of music coming in, the foxtrots and quick steps. And I mean, they would have started coming in here after the First World War, and that would might be the time to say mark the beginning of the end. Con Cassidy would have said that the traditional started to die out after the First World War. And say, for example, in a place like Teeling, which has such an incredible history of, you know, great singers and musicians, lilters, storytellers, and Shanachies and so on. The last fiddle player from Teeling, born and reared, the last musician, I should say, because there was also, you know, melodeon players and other instruments, but the last musician to be born and reared in Teeling and really stick with it, especially on the fiddle, because it was mainly a fiddle tradition, apart from Thomas Cunningham, the banjo player, the last person was really Con Cassidy. He was born in 1909, so there wasn't many people born through the 20s, 30s, 40s who would have picked up the instrument, and the show band thing came in the 50s, the rock and roll and all that, and you know, people want a different kind of music to dance to. I mean, James Bourne has interesting memories when he was a young lad. He remembers that sort of junction between the two types of music. There was he would be at the dances with his father, and some of the older guys get up on the stage at the beginning of the dance and play Highlands and barn dances and polkas and things, and the old timers would get out and dance that. But most of the crowd was there for what followed. And after maybe a half hour of indulging the old music and the old musicians, they'd be kind of swept aside, and a few other musicians would get up on the stage. People who would have also been traditional musicians as such, but they would have learnt these new tunes. These were so-called jazz tunes. And then the dance would really take off. So that change was, I think so, yeah.
The story all the way through the country. It wasn't just unique to this part of the country.
I think maybe in other parts of the country, somehow they managed to almost revive or reconstruct the traditional music along modern lines for modern listening audience, whereas I don't think that happened here. In some ways that's why it's more distinct or more distinctive, because I think it's kind of unreconstructed, the music here. It still very much harks back to the sounds, the house dance. I mean, the accent of the fiddle here, the intonation even, it's not something that's been influenced by listening to a great extent. A lot of the old traditional fiddle players, you know, that wasn't their their values were more than just listening. It had to do with timing and rhythm and things that served the dance.
But I'm not sure if you call it traditional music anymore. Like, is it, what is traditional music? I think there were so many musicians in this area, and I've done research on about 10 townlands in Glencullum Kill, and out of that 10 townlands, at one time there were 60 musicians. On average, if that works out for Glencullum Kill, there could be anything up to 250 or 300 in one parish. And what led to that strength was, it appears to have something to do with the way of life that people led at the time. And that's really traditional music. When you talk to somebody now from here, there isn't a great value put on that strength of tradition, that there was anything up to 250 musicians or 300 in this area, because it was so traditional and it was such a part of the way of life, of everyday life, how people lived here. And you hear people say, oh, there was a fiddle in every house, or there were somebody said to me this morning, there were Prince's Car out in Kilcar, I was getting petrol, and he said there were three or four fiddlers in every house. Now that's an exaggeration, but it was steeped completely in the tradition, in the traditional music, and that disappeared very, very quickly. It reached a height perhaps during the Second World War, when
listenership,
there was no immigration.
The support that musicians would have within their own communities gone, never mind the actual musicians themselves, apart from a few people. There's very few. There's only a handful of people now in the two parishes, Kilcar and Glencullum Kill, who would actually recognise that a tune that was played as being from their area.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really very few that would have that kind of in-depth knowledge of the tradition in terms of where the tune came from, or especially the old dance stuff. I mean, a lot of people would recognise kind of it's just enough for chance like that. But I mean, the old Highlands and Barn dances and polkas and so on, marches, very little knowledge left in the area of that. So that, and I mean, there's a parallel with this with the Irish language, with Irish language singing,
place names and everything like
with
that.
Knowledge of the locality, and there's reasons for it. It's not that anybody's criticising, it's just the way life moves on and changes. It was always in a state of motion. It never stood still, and we wouldn't want it to stand still. You can't. It stops being the great thing that it is once that happens.
Don't stop.
I had been studying classical music from the age of about 7 or 8 on the violin, including going to the College of Music in Dublin, and I had, at that stage, I got up to about grade 5, but my heart wasn't in it at all. I was hardly practicing the fiddle at all. I was doing very little music. I was learning the tin whistle separately and doing traditional music on that, but the week that we spent up in Glencullum Kill and listening to Johnny Doherty over in Carrick, in the cellar bar in Carrick, and also hearing all those fiddle players lined up on stage in and Holloway for the Cayley and Glenconic itself. My mother could say that there was a kind of a bit more interest coming into me towards that type of music. So when we're driving out of Carrick, having left Glenconic and Carrick behind us, and we're heading towards Kittybags, she turned around in the car and said to me, "You're not going back to the college anymore, are you?" I said, no, I wouldn't have any interest in that. But she says, "Okay, well, if I get you another teacher, will you go to that? Will you do traditional music?" And I said, "Yeah, do that." There's always good times to be had.
There are always places to go.
There's always places to go and people to meet and tunes to be played.